ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Continuing to discuss citing Srila Prabhupada in a bona fide, in a manner that reveals Srila Prabhupada's actual desires rather than our own desires or also avoiding misinterpretations of Srila Prabhupada. For instance, this whole Ritvik movement has arisen out of the interpretation that Srila Prabhupada could not have possibly appointed or desired that his disciples could become regular gurus. That was the word actually that Srila Prabhupada used, the term that he used, because he knew they were all so fallen and they all, pretty much all of them, fell down. So it's an argument from the consequences. But we don't know. It's just an interpretation. There's not the prominent evidence is that Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples to initiate. The fact that so many of us made a mess of it is another question. And how to respond to that is another question. One quote from this article of Satsarup Das Goswami that I'm loosely following in making this presentation. He writes that often new devotees accept anyone's claim that Prabhupada said something. And as in any tradition, inaccurate stories are passed down. One way to avoid this, Satsarup Das Goswami says, is to repeat only those stories that you have read, either in Srila Prabhupada's books or in a bona fide literature about Prabhupada. There's a pretty obvious problem with this statement. Anyone? Shall I read it again? One way to avoid this is to repeat only those stories that you have read, either in Srila Prabhupada's books or in a bona fide literature about Prabhupada. What's the problem with that? What constitutes bona fide literature? Yeah, that's already a subjective judgment. We'll see from the next page, the next page in my printout, that Satsarup Das Goswami considers Prabhupada Lilamrita to be authoritative. And it was actually stated to be the authoritative biography of Srila Prabhupada. But quite a few devotees that I know of say that, well, I was there when such and such an incident was described, took place, and it wasn't like that. And as I discussed in a previous session, there was a pretty well-known incident in Chicago when devotees were dancing more and more wildly and Srila Prabhupada stopped it. That's clear, because so many devotees said that. But how he stopped it, whether he got angry, he shouted, he mildly admonished them, there are different remembrances from devotees who are all present. Although the major point is there, the important point is clear, that Srila Prabhupada didn't like this speculative, wild dancing style. That's clear. That's the important point. The details, maybe they're not so important, but they are stated differently. Another major problem with the, I mean, overall, the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita is inspiring. I find it to be inspiring, and probably all of you do. And I know people have become devotees by reading it, by being inspired by that. But there are some problems. One problem is that it was written during the Zonal Acharya era, which you may or may not have heard about. Shortly after Srila Prabhupada left this world, 11 of his leading disciples took the role of initiating devotees and initiating gurus. And it's a long history, but they really made a mess of it. You want to say they? Well, maybe I should say we, because I was also a member of ISKCON at the time. So it was collective madness. Although it might have been good if they'd have not fallen down and not presumed that they were on the same level as Prabhupada. Anyway, it's a big story. But some of the political ramifications of that is that the prevailing worldview at that time influenced what was written there, and therefore Jayatirtha, who was a prominent devotee at the time, later he almost literally went mad. He's not mentioned at all in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. Another thing which my one of my godbrothers, who was president in Delhi and Vrindavan at the time, it states there that the two of the Zonal Acharyas, who were later Zonal Acharyas, what they did in Mayapur, that's praised, Prabhupada's praise of that, that comes out. But in Vrindavan, where there were no Zonal Acharyas came, it was the same kind of thing. In Mayapur and Vrindavan, devotees were struggling to build the temple. They made mistakes. They stuck to it. It was glory. In the end, it was glorious, but there were many mistakes made along the way. But in the on the Mayapur side, it's only the praise of the great, glorious so-and-so. Whereas on Vrindavan, they're just a bunch of bungling fools, and Prabhupada only chastised. That's what one of my godbrothers, who was on the Vrindavan side and really taking austerities that devotees, we can hardly imagine these days. We can't even imagine it in those days. So Srila Prabhupada chastised on both sides and he praised on both sides, but on the Mayapur side, you only get the praise because there are two of the Zonal Acharyas there. Only the praise is mentioned. And on the Vrindavan side, only the chastisement is mentioned. It's largely like that. And for some reason or other, the opening of Vrindavan temple isn't even mentioned in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. It's a major event in Srila Prabhupada's pastimes. Anyway, I don't know why. But bona fide literature about Prabhupada, what constitutes bona fide? That's a problem. So what do we do about all this? Do we just not quote any anecdotes that anyone told about Srila Prabhupada? No, we can do, but we should know that the level of authenticity is not the same as that in his books. But on the other hand, Srila Prabhupada did give many, many instructions that weren't in his books. Srila Prabhupada is quoted as saying that all that you need to know to become fully Krishna conscious is in my books. But he also gave many, many practical details about the organization of ISKCON in his letters, in his conversations, many of the conversations, so I'm told, about the organization of ISKCON, managerial conversations, weren't recorded. But obviously, Srila Prabhupada had many, many interactions with his leading disciples who are managing the movement about many issues. There's a short video clip of Srila Prabhupada discussing in Los Angeles with Rameshwar Prabhu, I think he was sannyasi at the time, about allocation of funds, how BBT funds can be used for loans for building temples and for printing books. And Srila Prabhupada says very clearly, printing books must come first. Printing books cannot, for building temples, printing books, we can't stop the printing for the sake of building temples. So it was managerial discussion. Most of that wasn't. So a lot of that is lost. And then we have the record, that which is recorded in writing. Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who you may have heard of, who was temple president in Philadelphia when Srila Prabhupada was there and was until fairly recently temple president there. He told me that he had a plan to take the deities, the large deities, on a procession in the city of Philadelphia, which is a major city in the USA. Not one of the most famous cities. Srila Prabhupada visited there for Rath Yatra and maybe some other times. But then when he was planning to do that, someone complained to and said that, no, there's instruction from Srila Prabhupada that the deities should never be moved from the altar. It's there in writing. And then it came to the GBC Deity Worship Ministry and they stopped it. But you see, Prabhupada said, but then Ravindra Swarup Prabhu told me, the Prabhupada told me personally, you should take the deities out. So in at least in his knowledge and memory, that instruction is, because it was given personally to him. So that, to him at least, that's more important than the instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave in Vrindavan for Abhishek of the deities, not to move the marble deities on the altar, this size of deity and this material of deity. We say brass in Hindi or Bengali, say Ashta Dhatu. They will be on, actually not even on the altar, but in traditional temples, but just taken, of course, that's South Indian tradition. They will have the Abhishek. Those ones have been. They have small deities for offering, who are offered bhog to, and big deities who are offered arati to. And then have other deities for taking out for festivals like this. So we should be cautious about this, especially if we hear some story of Srila Prabhupada said this, and it sounds doubtful, or we haven't heard it before, then we can just ask the person who told the story, well, what's the source of that? Often I get letters or devotees ask me, well, so-and-so said this, they said that Prabhupada said this, is it true? And I said, don't ask me, ask the person who said it. First of all, you ask them, is it bona fide? They'll ask, is it bona fide? Ask them, they should give their source. As Srila Prabhupada himself often said, and this is recorded, so it's not doubtful, that when we say something, we should immediately back it up. And he gave himself as an example, that when I say something, I immediately back it up with a quotation from Shastra. And as is noted in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, it's a very good point. We can also find out from the recordings of the lectures that Srila Prabhupada gave even in 1966, when he had no followers. What he was speaking, we nowadays think is very simple presentation of Krishna consciousness. His 1966 lectures, to the people he was speaking to, it's, I can guess that they could hardly understand anything he was talking about, because it was, the philosophy was so unusual to them. But Srila Prabhupada, even to such an audience, he would quote from Bhagavad Gita, he would give the examples from Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna doesn't want to fight, he is in illusion. And of course, in India, if you say these things, even to the present day, many people, if you talk about Arjuna doesn't want to fight, and immediately the kind of people who come to listen to our lectures are Hindus who are interested in these things. Of course, many Hindus are not interested in these things. So they have a background in this, and they understand the context. But people in the West, Arjuna, I have no idea whether if Arjuna is a person or a tree or a cat or it's some Indian word. They have no idea what is Arjuna. Actually, there is a tree called Arjuna. But when we say Arjuna, we usually refer to the Arjuna of the Mahabharata. So Srila Prabhupada, he would cite Shastra. That gives authority and shows that Srila Prabhupada wasn't just speaking some idea of his own. He repeatedly stressed this point. When we speak, we should cite authority, which is a whole subject here, of this ongoing discussion. Is this the third session or the fourth session? I can't remember. The fifth session. Okay. And I didn't even get off the first page yet. And I have how many pages? 6 and a bit pages. So we're talking about citing the authority of Srila Prabhupada. Within ISKCON, it's very authoritative to cite Srila Prabhupada. Unfortunately, it's becoming less so due to doubts in Srila Prabhupada that are running throughout our movement. As I already said this Burke Rochford, some scholar, has written in a book several years ago that 2000, I think it's over 10 years ago, he made this book in which it says that such and such an event marked the fact that the GBC failed to respond to protests against Srila Prabhupada being blasphemed. It marked a watershed in ISKCON's history because indirectly it marked that Srila Prabhupada's authority is no longer accepted as absolute within ISKCON. And we often hear that. If you say, well, Prabhupada said this, oh, Prabhupada said so many things. You can quote any, and there's even one devotee I know says, don't quote Prabhupada, because then someone else will bring another quote and you have to make your own argument. But then, based on what? Do we go directly to Shastra? But the fact that Srila Prabhupada is quoted on both sides of issues. Does the soul fall from the spiritual world? Yes or no? Both sides will quote Srila Prabhupada. Should devotees eat chocolate? Both sides quote Srila Prabhupada. Traditionalist approach to Krishna consciousness versus, it doesn't necessarily have to be versus, but it is often pitched as versus a modernistic, liberal, Western, whatever you want to call it, approach. Both sides will quote Srila Prabhupada, and they may also, apart from quoting him, give their understanding of how we understand Prabhupada's overall mission and place his quotes in that context. Now, reading again from this paper by Satsrup Das Goswami, Srila Prabhupada was quite aware that he was being misquoted by his disciples. I would like to add to that sentence that he was sometimes misquoted, because this sentence might give the impression that Srila Prabhupada was always being misquoted. Srila Prabhupada regularly had to clear up doubts springing from rumors. For instance, that due to police repression, Sankirtan would stop. Srila Prabhupada wrote in a letter that I didn't say that. You're aware of this, that book distribution will come to an end. Or that his Guru Maharaj was one of the eight Sakhis, one of the eight most prominent assistants of female assistants of Srimati Radharani. There would be a depression and atomic war. There'd be no more marriages in ISKCON. Now, there may have been grounds that devotees had heard something from Srila Prabhupada, and they took it a little bit further, and then they made something else. I remember in England in 1975, if you trust my memory of this anecdote, when a female devotee came from France and gave class in Bhaktivedanta manner to a full house. It's the only time at that time that I'd seen or heard of Mataji's giving Bhagavatam class. She made a statement therein that Prabhupada had said that after he passes away, all his disciples will bloop. And that really disturbed all the devotees. They thought, then we're hopeless. Prabhupada said we're all just going to leave and go away. And it really depressed all the devotees, as you can imagine. And I think it was just the same day or the next day, a sannyasi who had been traveling with Prabhupada for the last so many months. Okay, you see, because these were days before the internet, and you might not get news of Srila Prabhupada for weeks or months. In England, we often got quite up-to-date news, because in those days, most of the devotees in the movement were in America, and if they were going to Europe or to India, mostly they'd stop in London on the way. So we got, and Prabhupada was in India and America more than other places. So we'd get devotees coming, and we'd get the news, and then we get letters written. So Srila Prabhupada, he'd been the traveling secretary with Srila Prabhupada for the last so many months. And he came, and he said, well, I've been with Prabhupada for months, and I never heard such a thing. And that marked the end of women giving classes. Although, yeah, and then he said, you shouldn't allow women to give classes, although it wasn't going on anyway. Although it's not a logical conclusion, if one woman says something wrong, that all women should be stopped. Incidentally, in this ongoing controversy about this book of mine, Mothers and Masters, it's often cited that I quote Srila Prabhupada so many times, 150 times, this. So it must be in line with what Prabhupada said. That's also a logical fallacy. Because I quote Prabhupada so many times doesn't necessarily mean that I'm giving the message which Srila Prabhupada gave, because I could put, I'm probably well enough versed in philosophy now from reading Srila Prabhupada's books all these years, that I could quote Prabhupada 150 times and establish Mayavad by putting some comments. You could say, there are actually statements in the Bhagavatam which, if you take it at face value, they seem like Mayavad. So, just that you quote Srila Prabhupada, but you can give some interpretation on it also. So, I'm not saying that my book is not bona fide, but the fact that it does quote Srila Prabhupada many times shows, infer from that I take the message of Srila Prabhupada very seriously, because I could have written it without reference to him, or so much reference. But it doesn't necessarily follow that, for instance, I could have left out altogether verses, just like that purport I spoke on the other morning, which seems to, which is often quoted to say that, well, all Prabhupada said so many things about Vedic culture and this and this, but this purport shows that actually Prabhupada wanted the men and women to all be equal and mixed together and this and that, to some degree mixed together. You could quote that purport to state that, well, Prabhupada said so many things, but this cancels all that out. So I consider that in the book also. Srila Prabhupada being misquoted. I recently came across something that Srila Prabhupada was recorded as having said, and I can understand how this lady devotee took that statement and just put a... She may not have done it herself. She may have heard it from someone else and put another, a little twist on it, and then it comes out differently. And actually, there are many statements from Srila Prabhupada that, for instance, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada says that it's just a very short purport, and Srila Prabhupada says that if the devotees of the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement do not regularly read the books that have been published, they will eventually, they will fall down. So, and many times Srila Prabhupada made statements. In a lecture in Mayapur, he saw that devotees, they were doing some service, they weren't in the class, and Srila Prabhupada changed the whole course of the class and said that if you don't come and regularly hear, then you'll all fall down. In one letter, he said that my godbrothers fought among themselves after my Guru Maharaj left, but my disciples are fighting even in my presence. So there are various statements that you could take that Srila Prabhupada warned that if you, unless you go on with the preaching, unless you keep on pushing the preaching, there'll be no more Hari Hari Bol. In that lecture in Mayapur, he said, if you don't hear regularly, then you'll have no taste to perform devotional service. The deity worship will become a burden for you, and you'll think these deities are just a burden. Now, here's an anecdote that Satsarup Das Goswami, he cites it from... He says when Prabhupada was lecturing in the Bowery, this was even before the 26 Second Avenue times, one of his new students, Mr. Paul, had said, Swamiji, I understand that in your household life you had 20 children. Prabhupada said that he didn't know where the man had got that information from, and he'd never had 20 children. So Srila Prabhupada gave this as an example, that you have to hear from the person himself rather than someone else. But then we all hear from Srila, most all of us, what we hear about Srila Prabhupada, we hear about from others. Is it that Srila Prabhupada said something to a devotee and then the devotee doesn't tell it to someone else because he thinks, well, I'll be misunderstood, or we don't completely reject everything that everyone said. In fact, there was a paper which was written by the erstwhile Harikesh Swami about kirtan instructions. And that was, he said that Srila Prabhupada had told him that he wants to establish these kirtan standards. I'm telling you, you tell others. And he wrote in that paper that I never did so because I thought no one would listen to me. But now, so many years later, it was about 1981. In 1981, we thought that's a long time after Prabhupada left. That's the way time works psychologically. So he said, now I'm putting it in writing because so many devotees have asked me to do so. And nowadays, if you quote that, they'll say, oh, Hare Krishna, he fell down. So, but at the time, everyone took it seriously. So I don't see why he shouldn't be taken seriously now, when it was, no one doubted that Prabhupada had told him to give these instructions to others. No one doubted it. Why should they doubt it? He didn't have a habit at that time of making things up and speculating. So we can take that as authoritative. But then in that paper, in that essay, he writes, Harikesh X. Rami writes that, well, Srila Prabhupada, he told me to don't, this shouldn't be done. But then other devotees will say, well, I was chanting this, Gaur Nityananda Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. And Prabhupada never stopped it. And as far as that devotee is concerned, it's completely bona fide because he did it in Prabhupada's presence. But one thing in understanding Srila Prabhupada and how he instructed us is that, now this you may say is a speculation, but I think it's well grounded, that many times he allowed devotees to do things. He didn't actually approve of it, or he knew it wasn't the best standard, but at the same time, he just let it go on. And I believe Harikesh makes this point in his essay, that he saw devotees are enthusiastic about, okay, let them chant and dance. But then sometimes, as in Chicago, when the dancing just got wild, he would stop it. And he also told Tejas Prabhu, who told me this several times, that once Srila Prabhupada, there was an ecstatic kirtan in Delhi in a public program. And afterwards, Prabhupada asked Tejas Prabhu, who had organized the program, what did you think of that kirtan? And Tejas Prabhu didn't know what to say. Am I supposed to say, yes, it's nice, or no, it wasn't nice? And then Prabhupada said it was, I can't remember exactly. Clanging and banging, you know. Yeah, said it was clanging and banging. And then they went back to the Delhi center, which at that time was a tiny rented house. And Srila Prabhupada said, now I will, this is late at night, it was already after the program, now I'll show you what is kirtan. Srila Prabhupada sat down on the harmonium and sang very sweetly. About harmonium, Srila Prabhupada himself often played harmonium, as we know. But he said it shouldn't be played in the temple, not for aartis, and not in the temple. It's not approved by... Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't like it at all. You can find in his writings. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati didn't allow it. Then why did Prabhupada play it? Well, my supposition is that he was trained like that in his childhood by his father, and actually he plays it very beautifully. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur he wanted to root out sahajya. Why? And now I'm giving my interpretation. Someone else might give another interpretation. He wanted to root out sahajya elements, which were very prominent in Vaishnavism in Bengal at the time. A lot of showiness in kirtan, and especially harmonium playing. It's a very common thing. They'll be singing and make some hand gesture like this, and it's considered that's what you should do. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't like this showiness. Yeah, then going on. Another way of misquoting Srila Prabhupada, Satsrudas Goswami says, is to take something Srila Prabhupada said in a particular circumstance, although it may or not have been his general instruction on that point, and stress it as evidence. I can give an example of this. Many years ago, I was the temple president in Dhaka in Bangladesh. The temple was a few devotees at that time. Now there are hundreds and thousands of devotees in many temples there. One of my godbrothers, he had a habit of getting up at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I was trying to get on his case, although not too much, because we hardly had any devotees, and at least he was doing something, some service. Actually, he did a lot of service when he got up. So I said to him, come on, there's so many quotes from Srila Prabhupada that you have to rise early and attend the morning prayer. And he said, Prabhupada said his father was a pure devotee and his father used to rise late. And that's supposed to cancel out all of Prabhupada's instructions about rising early. Srila Prabhupada cited that my father did rise a little late, but he didn't say we should rise late. Another time I said to a devotee that you have to get up early in the morning. Prabhupada said, so, well, my guru doesn't get up for Mangalati, so why should I? So what do you say about that? Well, your guru should follow what Prabhupada said. Qualification to be a guru in ISKCON is to follow what Srila Prabhupada says. Not that you're independently self-effulgent. You might be independently self-effulgent. The disciple may think like that. And again, I didn't throw the devotee out because he was the only other devotee in the temple at the time. Then we got someone else, and we went out on traveling Sankirtan. Me and him. He didn't get up in the morning, and he didn't do anything. The only thing he did was to offer the bhog after I'd begged it and cooked it, and then take it. That was the only thing he did. But it was, at least there was someone to be with. Some kind. I heard that also. There was a prominent Gaudiya Math preacher preaching in North India, one devotee, I was told this, the one devotee asked, why do you keep all these people with you? They're lazy, they quarrel, they're not serious. He said, well, you know, I go on these preaching programs, we have to have someone in the kirtan. It may be like that. I throw them out there. It's difficult doing a one-man program. I used to do it in Bangladesh also. Anyway, I won't speak about that. So we should understand what is the instruction, not look for exceptions. Just like sometimes some devotee comes and asks me a question about something. About should we do this or should we do that? And I can just sense they're looking for the particular answer. And if I don't give it, they'll go to another sannyasi and then another and another. When they get the answer they want, they'll quote, so-and-so said so. Just the other day I said, this is what you're doing, isn't it? You want me to say this? And then you'll quote, is it okay to blah, 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 whatever? And then no. And then someone else says no. Someone else says no. And someone says yes. Oh, so-and-so Swami said. He found this is a cheating process. Now here, Satsarup Das Goswami gives an example. We often hear devotees quote Prabhupada saying that he had completed only 50% of his work to defend development of Varnashram. But what is the origin of this statement? In Prabhupada Lilamrita, we find it as follows. We have all met together, Srila Prabhupada. We want you to remain and lead this movement and finish the Bhagavatam. We said that you must remain for at least another 10 years. You have only done 50% of your work. Srila Prabhupada was listening carefully without any movement, But when Brahmananda said 50%, he frowned and said no. So that's the end of the quote from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. Although Prabhupada is purported to have used this figure of 50% again in London in 1977, it was originally spoken by Brahmananda and not approved by Prabhupada. Now, the first thing is that he takes the Prabhupada Lilamrita to be completely authoritative. The other thing is he says that Brahmananda first said that. But we do. I've personally heard from two of my godbrothers, not Brahmananda, that Prabhupada had said this in their presence. So Brahmananda was not just something that it doesn't seem that it's something that just floated into Brahmananda. It'd be a very heavy thing to say to Srila Prabhupada if he hadn't heard it from some other source. That Prabhupada, you've only done 50%. It'd be very insulting to say that if he hadn't thought that Prabhupada himself had said that. Prabhupada said, frowned and said, no. Now, I don't know if Prabhupada saying that. It's quoted in the Lilamrita, but did Prabhupada say that? We don't know. But then, then Satsarupadas Goswami says that this doesn't mean that Prabhupada didn't consider the development of Vanashram in Dharma in ISKCON is very important, but he says that this particular reference, 50%, that may not be the overwhelming important, because there are so many statements from Srila Prabhupada which are recorded and solid that Vanashram Dharma must be established, it must be done. So there are plenty of same. If you don't like that 50% one, you don't have to take it. But even without that, he makes the point that that there are so many statements of Srila Prabhupada which are very solid and authoritative about the importance of establishing Varnashram. And there are also quotes from Srila Prabhupada where he says it's not possible in Kali Yuga. So you can take that quote and throw out all the dozens of other ones. But then in another place, Srila Prabhupada states that as far as possible, we should establish it. We can't go to the old system exactly as it's described in Srimad Bhagavatam, but as far as possible, Srila Prabhupada states. So it's required, if there are various instructions from Srila Prabhupada on a topic, to take them all and find the general gist, not just take one quote and that's it. Take them all and see. Another example Satsarupadas Goswami gives from a letter, Prabhupada wrote that if you have to sell books, do it by hook or by crook. By hook or by crook means by any means possible. And by hook or by crook also suggests, crook suggests crooked means, or like crooks. A crook means a criminal. But here I believe crook in the original English, it doesn't mean by criminal methods, it means by hook. And crook is something, there's a shepherd's crook, which is used for, what's that used for catching sheep or what, I don't know, yeah. So, different, yeah. But, there are other statements. For instance, Srila Prabhupada wrote, you should know the tactic how to sell without irritating. And that's in the same letter where Srila Prabhupada says you should sell by hook or by crook. So the statement is qualified. The word qualified in this context means modified. There's a statement, but then there's some modifier also. Just like there's in one conversation, Srila Prabhupada said, actually all these people, they should be killed. But then he says, but in this age, it's not advisable. See, according to the Vedic standards, most of the people in the modern world, if we're in the government of Lord Ramachandra or Yudhishthira, you see, Parikshit Maharaj is ready to kill a person for even beating a cow. What to speak of killing and eating, slaughterhouses. So by Vedic standards, everyone should be killed. But that's not applicable in Kali Yuga. So we shouldn't take that quote and go around saying, well, everyone should be killed. That's true that Prabhupada said that. But you have to see also how he modified that. It's a very important topic, isn't it? Because someone could take this and they could either criticize Srila Prabhupada as being starting a terrorist movement or a movement with the... Or someone could actually take it and start a terrorist movement. In fact, in New Zealand, there were some devotees, when Srila Prabhupada was present, they were making a bomb to blow up a slaughterhouse. But it blew up when they were making it, and they got killed. And it came in the news that Hare Krishna devotees were making a bomb. And Prabhupada said, no, we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't blow up the slaughterhouse. Now, if by political or whatever means we happen to take over the government, then we could blow up the slaughterhouse. But in the meantime, Srila Prabhupada didn't approve of that. Why is that? It would seem like a good idea to blow up the slaughterhouse. It wouldn't stop the animal killing. It wouldn't stop it. It would go on. They'd send the animals to another. There's so many slaughterhouses. They'd send the animals to another slaughterhouse. It would be symbolic at most. There was a movement called the Ananda Marg. Maybe some of you remember. It was quite, not very big, but it was internationally spread. But they lost all credibility when some of their members bombed the Indian embassy in Sydney, Canberra, in Australia somewhere. They lost all credibility. Their leader was put in jail and the whole movement pretty much collapsed. Srila Prabhupada also said, you can do anything for Krishna. That's true, but that's largely theoretical in many cases, because in one letter, Srila Prabhupada disapproved of smuggling for Krishna, and he cited the example of one Indian guru who had been caught smuggling something into India, and all his credibility was lost. And I'll just finish this paragraph here. There is also ample evidence that the best way, and it's very clear from Srila Prabhupada, he said the best way to please him is to preach and distribute his books. And sometimes we say, well, that's the only way. But then there's also ample evidence that Srila Prabhupada accepts whatever service is performed for the ISKCON mission. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada says, yes, emphasize. And there's no doubt from Srila Prabhupada's letters, and in one purport, Srila Prabhupada writes that all activities in the Krishna consciousness movement center around book production and distribution. There's no doubt that Srila Prabhupada put tremendous stress on book distribution, but he accepted all services. And actually, if there was only book distribution, if everyone only did book distribution, then who would cook the breakfast, for instance? Who would print the books? Who would manage legal matters which arise when you're dealing in hundreds and thousands of books? Legal matters will arise. Someone has to deal. If you don't deal with that, then you can get in a lot of trouble, as our devotees have often found out by not tending to legal matters and then just not bothering, and then they get in a lot of trouble. Sometimes it's thought that someone who only does kirtan or maybe lives in Vrindavan, they must be a Paramahamsa. But someone is managing the temple so that they can sit there and do the kirtan. And that's also accepted as service by Krishna. So to say that, this service is the... In one place, Srila Prabhupada said that this Gurukul is our most important project. And Srila Prabhupada sent one of his sannyasis who was doing amazing preaching in India, groundbreaking work, traveling in South India and giving lectures and meeting big, important people, important spiritual leaders, and really doing very impressive preaching. And Srila Prabhupada took him out of this preaching, not that he disapproved, he was very pleased with the preaching, to make him the headmaster of the school in Vrindavan, because he said the best men should be in the Gurukul. So Srila Prabhupada put a lot of emphasis. That was a case where Srila Prabhupada actually, you could say, downgraded the preaching or took out a very successful preacher because he wanted to promote the Gurukul. In another place he said this, scientific preaching, Bhaktivedanta Institute, that's our most important preaching. To one lady disciple who was worshipping the deity, she'd just had a baby, he said, now for you, baby worship is more important than deity worship. Looking after a baby, that's more important than deity worship? How can that be? But that's, Srila Prabhupada said that. It's the mother has to look after the child, so the child is raised. Apart from raising in Krishna consciousness, to bring a child into the world is a great responsibility. And you can't just, now I have to chart my round, so forget the baby. It doesn't really... Srila Prabhupada is very practical. He said, "If it's more important for you than deity worship." You may say, well, millions of women have babies and hardly anyone worships deity, so surely deity worship must be more important. No, he probably said, for you, baby worship, in other words, looking after the baby, it's more important. You have to look after the child. So I'll finish there for this session. Hare Krishna. It's going on. It's ongoing. All these discussions. I'm taking this up. I didn't finish yet. If you think I'm finished, often it's not. There's always a postscript. But these are very, very important topics, and I'm particularly taking this up now it's still ongoing, this whole controversy about this book of mine that was banned, because at the root of this is, how do we understand Srila Prabhupada and apply this in our movement? And actually, that's the main subject of the book, if you read it carefully. The women's roles and this and that, that is widely discussed, and the title is given like that, because if I put a book about Varnashram, no one's interested. If you put a book with a woman with a machine gun, and that's something interesting, isn't it? So it's a bit of a hook or crook. But the first part of the book is about the direction of our movement and how we've neglected Varnashram, we should take it up, it's Srila Prabhupada's mandate. So how do we understand and apply Srila Prabhupada's instructions? It's a vital question for our movement. What is the direction of our movement? Do we become Do we merge into the modern society which Srila Prabhupada, on the basis of Shastra, says is demoniac? And I had the realization, and probably most of Srila Prabhupada's disciples and many of his followers, disciples of his disciples, one reason I was very much convinced by Srila Prabhupada is that we all understood, but it wasn't clear in our mind that modern society is demoniac. But we couldn't put it all together. We knew something's wrong, something serious. Even many karmis, they understood something's seriously wrong, but they couldn't describe it clearly and what are the causes. And the examples that Srila Prabhupada often gave, just like animals, if you put United Nations, at that time everyone thought, oh, United Nations, how wonderful, making peace in the world, it's wonderful. And Srila Prabhupada said, they're like a group of barking dogs. If you put dogs in a room, they'll just bark. There won't be any unity because they're dogs. And Srila Prabhupada said, human beings at the present time, they're just like dogs. It's not just insulting. He gave ahara nidra by, they're eating, sleeping, mating and defending. They have no higher goal of life. They're in dog consciousness, bodily concept of life. So they'll bark like dogs. What can you expect from them? So Srila Prabhupada, with the knowledge of Shastra and his own clear conviction, he made it very clear what we all understood is something very, very seriously wrong with modern society. So, and he gave the alternative. There are so many people in the world now, not at that time, but, well, the hippie movement, they understood there's something wrong, but they didn't understand what was wrong. They thought the Vietnam War was wrong. Prabhupada didn't seem to think the Vietnam War was that wrong. He thought their illicit sex was more wrong than the Vietnam War. And their slogan was, make love, not war. And Prabhupada said, well, the war's not so bad, but the illicit sex, that's bad. So at that time, yeah, just the hippies were beginning. And there have always been people there. Charles Dickens, in his books, wrote about the social inequity in England at the time, and that led to, so then there was the socialist Fabian movement in England, and then we had people like John Steinbeck writing books about the social situation in America, and then there was someone in Germany who realized there's something wrong with German society. His name was Adolf Hitler. He was right, there was something wrong, but his solution, the final solution, not a very good solution. Then there are so many others who understand this. George Orwell, very insightful person, who saw how leaders are what we would call demons, but they had no solution, and they didn't have any clear understanding of what's wrong. Srila Prabhupada clearly understood what is wrong. The root cause of all problems is ignorance of our existential position as eternal servants of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada gave that solution. So what is the direction of our movement? Should we come closer to modern society? No. No, no. We may make adjustments as Srila Prabhupada did for living in and preaching to this society, but we should not be enamored by it. That's the message that I want to get across with this book more than anything else. It's a very serious time in our movement when we think that modern society is actually very civilized and advanced, then we're really, really in very serious trouble because we've lost our vision. We're supposed to get vision from Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishne Swadhamopagate Dharma Jnana Dibhisaha. Kalo Nashta Drisham Esha Purana Ako Dhuno Ditaha. Srila Prabhupada translates this, that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, left this world accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost this vision, their vision, means their spiritual vision, due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this Kali Yuga, shall get light from this Bhagavad Purana, which is just like the sun. But if we think that this society is actually very progressive and advanced, then we've lost our vision. We need to follow Srimad Bhagavatam with Prabhupada's purports. Now, that's off the topic, because the topic is how to understand Prabhupada, and I'm saying this is how we should understand. But unless we come to that, this is not just some theoretical philosophy class. It's supposed to come to the conclusion. The conclusion, and again, different devotees will come to their own different conclusions. But and then you have to follow Mahajano Yena Gata Sapa. You choose who you want to follow. But personally, I find it. Personally, I can only say personally. I find it disastrous and highly distressing that in the name of Srila Prabhupada, we want to come closer to this disaster of a society, modern Western society. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.